Well, it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. I have a lot to talk about today. I wasn't here last week as I was in Washington, D.C., joining, I don't know, 500,000 people to March for Life. And that was a great time on Friday afternoon. The weather held out and just a huge, huge crowd. I would argue one of the biggest crowds I've been a part of at the march over the last 4 or 5 years. Certainly grateful to be there. But a lot has happened over the weekend. We have the Mayor Buttigieg from Illinois, I believe. Isn't it Illinois? I don't know. It's some small place that he's the mayor of South Bend. That's it. And so he is in the news again as he continues to show his, you know, a lot of folks said, look, the mayor is a moderate candidate and conservatives should give him a look because he's a moderate candidate. The reality is none of them are moderate, and he certainly is not moderate. He is for abortion throughout the entire pregnancy, and his latest comments on the town hall on Fox News just the other night proved that even further. And so we're going to look at that. We're also going to look at, look, I've had a lot of time to think, and I was in Washington, D.C., and I was a history minor in college, and I love history. I'm currently on a Civil War I'm reading and listening and watching documentaries and do everything focused on the Civil War. And so then being in Washington last week and all the history that goes around the city, I came home and I just have been thinking and thinking and thinking. And today I finally put some things down on paper. And when I say down on paper, I put them in a computer and I wrote them down. And so I'm going to read that to you here in a second as well as we look at the morality issue of the day. The Abraham Lincoln back in the day finally boldly stood up and looked at the issue of his day, which was slavery, and looked at it from a moral standpoint. The issue of our day, I would argue, is abortion, and we're going to look at it from a moral standpoint. So we're going to look at that as well. So a lot to talk about. Hope you had a great week. I hope maybe some of you went to the local march here in Knoxville. Hopefully you did. There was over 1,000 people at that march with politicians and other folks involved, and we're just grateful to see the needle move. One thing big that happened at the March for Life in Washington was for the first time in the history of the March for Life, a sitting president spoke from the stage. What that means is President Donald Trump became the first president to ever speak directly to the group in person. He provided a video, I believe last year or the year before, but this year, the day before the march, he did announce that he was going to speak, and he did an amazing job. You can find that online, and I would encourage you to do so. So just an awesome thing to be a part of there in Washington, D.C. And some of you may be wondering, well, why do you go to Washington? Why do you go and be a part of the march? You constantly talk about on here that, look, it's more than a vote. It's more than a bumper sticker. It's more than Supreme Court justices. Then why are you involved in kind of the advocacy side? Well, the reason I am is because we need all of that. We need pregnancy centers absolutely on the front lines doing the work, the work that's being done at Hope Resource Center today, loving on moms and loving on the women of our city. But we also need folks that are going to be willing to vote, folks that are going to be willing to run for office, folks that are going to be willing to truly advocate for the most vulnerable among us. And there is no other population that is more vulnerable than the unborn. Truly have no voice. And so that's why we go to Washington. That's why we open up pregnancy centers. That's why we love our neighbor. That's why we adopt. That's why we foster. That's why we take in single moms and help them when they need assistance, is because we truly believe that this work is worth all of that. And so that's why we made that trip to Washington, D.C. Before I get into the comments of the mayor, the Democratic presidential candidate, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, I want to go over some thoughts that I've had in my mind over the last couple weeks, considering what we're dealing with abortion and looking at it through the lens of history. And so I love history, specifically American history. Currently, this love, as I said, has me focused on the Civil War and the work to save the Union. I'm often amazed to hear pundits argue that our nation in the year 2020 has never been more divided. This argument would make sense if not for our own nation's history, a history that literally involves a nation at war with itself. Now, I don't intend to dissect the Civil War here today, but I do think it is important to look in the rearview mirror to make sure that we do not repeat past mistakes. This rearview mirror is where I find myself today as I reflect on the words from our past president that I believe still ring true. Words from a hopeful politician named Abraham Lincoln in 1854 in the city of Peoria, Illinois. Note the date of this three-hour speech. This was 7 years before he would hold the title president and 6 years after holding the office of congressman. Lincoln had aspirations and wanted to call the White House his home, but the path to that destination wouldn't be easy as he began to address the issue of the day, and that would be slavery. With his political career in limbo, Lincoln sat to give a speech in Illinois addressing the morality of slavery. We now know that this speech was the vehicle needed to resurrect a political career that many thought was over. Now, before I get into the speech there in Illinois, I feel the need to provide some context. I just returned again to Tennessee after spending a week in Washington, D.C. I joined hundreds of thousands as we peacefully yet boldly marched for the life of the unborn. We heard from politicians, advocates, and survivors as we wrestled with the issue of our day, that issue being abortion. Since its passing in 1973, Roe v. Wade has given us over 60 million abortions. This number represents millions of individual unique lives that were never before created and will never again have a chance at life. This is a truth that often keeps me up at night as I reflect on the loss of life and the devastating impact this generational moral collapse has had on our society. Am I referring to abortion as a generational moral collapse is not shared by all. As some argue, abortion to be moral and even go further by calling it health care. The morality question is important for a civilized society. History doesn't lie. We can look back to Lincoln's speech in Illinois and without equivocation agree that slavery was immoral and should have been ended swiftly without any hesitation. We see this through the rearview, but those of that era saw Lincoln's speech as bold and counter to the larger narrative of the day. Lincoln did what some refused to do. He spoke calmly and eloquently about an issue that some didn't want to address. This is not an easy thing to do, but oftentimes the right and needed conversation is hard. This hard conversation is where Lincoln found himself as he addressed the morality problem concerning slavery. And here's what he said. He said, "The doctrine of self-government is right, absolutely and eternally right, but it has no just application as here attempted. Or perhaps I should rather say that whether it has just application depends on whether a black man is not or is a man. If he is not a man, why in that case he who is a man may, as a matter of self-government, do just as he pleases with him. But if the black man is a man, is a person, is it not to that extent a total destruction of self-government to say that he too shall not govern himself? When the white man governs himself, that is self-government, but when he governs himself and also governs another man, that is more than self-government. That is despotism. If this black man is a man, why then my ancient faith teaches me that all men are created equal and that there can be no moral right in connection with one man's making a slave of another." Lincoln was very strategic in his language. Everyone, whether they would admit it or not, could see that African Americans were human. Lincoln knew that and challenged them by stating the obvious. He pointed to self-government, which was and continues to be one of the highest ideals for all Americans. He then shifted to his ancient faith that teaches that all men are created equal. This was another very strategic line as it hearkened to his faith along with the words of the Declaration of Independence. These were not throwaway lines by the future president. He spoke poignantly to his audience as he sought to call on their better natures using language that all would understand just 78 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Every single time I read these words, I cannot help but think of where we are today with the issue of abortion. We have targeted yet another demographic, a demographic, mind you, that represents every race, gender, and background. Lincoln's question on personhood still applies today. If the unborn is human, and science has proven it is, then when will we make the proper corrections to our law and our court decisions to say as such? When will we stand up for our fellow man? When will we answer the call and protect the most vulnerable among us? I hesitate to edit any of Lincoln's speech, but I would argue that if he were here today, he might say something like this. If the unborn is a man, a person, why then my ancient faith teaches me that all men are created equal, and that there can be no moral right in connection with one man's ending the life of another via abortion. This message still works today. I was honored to join so many in Washington this past week, and I'm blessed to work alongside so many as we serve our neighbors through thousands of pregnancy centers across this country. I believe we have made great strides on this issue, but we will not see the end of abortion until we, as Lincoln encouraged, deal with the morality of the issue that has decimated millions since 1973. You see, so as we look through history, and that's one thing that our country has always done, we were willing to look in the mirror and make corrections, whether it be slavery, or women's suffrage, or civil rights, or child labor. We were willing to look in the mirror and go, yeah, we got this wrong. We need to correct that. Even the founders, when they put the language in the Declaration, when they put the language in the Constitution about men being created equally, they did that knowing that at that moment in time, there are men in this country that were enslaved. But they put those words in that document to say, this is the ideal. This is what we strive to be, even though we may not be there right now. But every man is endowed with rights from his Creator. And so if we believe that to be true, and as Abraham Lincoln said in that speech in Illinois before he was president, that look, if a black man is a man, then he has rights to govern himself, and we have no right to govern over him, meaning enslave him. Then it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say, if we believe that there's life in the womb, and it's an individual life with its own blood type, with its own organs, with its own dreams, with its own fingers and toes and brain, that we have no right to end the life of that child. So that's why I went to D.C. That's why we marched. That's why we opened the doors of Hope Resource Center. Because we do believe that there's life in the womb. We do believe that there is rights when it comes to abortion, but those rights are not for us to end a life. Those rights go to the most vulnerable, which is the unborn baby growing inside of its mom. And yet here we are. One of the most civilized societies the world has ever seen. And just last year, we had close to 800,000 abortions. A lot of work to do. And when I get back, I'll talk to you about what some of the candidates are saying on the campaign trail in terms of abortion. We'll talk in a sec. You made a man that's fragile. You made a heart that can break. You showed me the road less traveled. Knowing I'm gonna run away. You make me love so hard when everything I love just leaves. Are you sure there's nothing wrong with me? So the conversation continues as we look at what's going on in the news and around this country and around the world. If you listen to that first segment, and you thought, wow, you kind of went through that a little too fast when talking about Abraham Lincoln and what he said back in the 1800s and how I connected that to the issue of the day when it comes to abortion. You can find the transcript of that at investinghope.com. It's on the blog today, and so would encourage you to go there, share it with some friends. Of course, you can listen to this show either live over at Joy 620, or you can listen to the podcast, investinghope.com, Google Play, iTunes, wherever podcasts are found. So as we kind of shift gears and look to the current presidential race, we have a lot of candidates have stepped away from the Democratic field. Some are staying in, although the polls are showing that it's becoming kind of a Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders. That looks to be the top tier in seeing who may come out on top. We'll have to wait and see, but right now it looks to be Biden and Sanders. The Iowa caucus is happening very soon as well. But I wanted to talk about a town hall that occurred over on Fox News. And one thing I will say, I give credit to any Democratic candidates that actually go on Fox News. Many of them refuse to do that. The fact that they went on a town hall on Fox News was a big deal. But there's an article over at National Review that I would encourage you to look at. National Review does a great job of paying attention to what's going on in the abortion conversation in our country. And so National Review, they have a great piece right now talking about what happened on Sunday evening. So during Sunday evening's Fox News town hall, Buttigieg demonstrated not only that today's Democratic Party has no time for members who dissent from the party line on unlimited abortion, but also that he has little idea how to justify his dismissive position without dodging the question. So what happened was Kristen Day is the president of the interest group Democrats for Life. And so there is an interest group called Democrats for Life. Kristen Day is the president of that organization. She was given an opportunity to address a question to the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana. That's Illinois earlier. He's from Indiana. An occurrence that almost certainly would not have been permitted at a town hall operated by any mainstream outlet outside of Fox News. And so it is important to ensure that the public never knows the existence of the elusive, quote, pro-life Democrats. And see, many of you probably listening to this don't know there's an organization called Pro-Life Democrats. And the reason you don't know that is because they don't get any airtime on the cable news outlets. And they certainly don't get any airtime when it comes to Democratic conventions. So the question from Kristen Day was this: do you want the support of pro-life Democratic voters? She goes further. There are about 21 million of us, and if so, would you support more moderate platform language in the Democratic Party to ensure that the party of diversity, of inclusion, really does include everybody? And here's what the mayor had to say. He offered several equivocations in response, including the following. He said this: the best I can offer is that if we can agree on where to draw the line, the next best thing we can do is agree on who should draw the line. And then he says, and in my view, it's the woman who's faced with that decision in her own life. This wasn't the first time that he has used that evasive formulation. In fact, when he took part in a Fox News town hall last spring, he hosted by Chris Wallace, he offered a similar indirect reply. Here's the key part of that exchange. Wallace looked at him and said, do you believe at any point in pregnancy, whether it's at 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 24 weeks or whenever, that there should be any limit on a woman's right to abortion? And the mayor responded, I think the dialogue has gotten so caught up in when you draw the line that we've gotten away from the fundamental question of who gets to draw the line. And I trust the woman to draw the line. Now you have to understand something about politicians. They find a quote, a line, a theme, and they will use that throughout the campaign. So it's no surprise to me that he said this to Chris Wallace back in the spring, and he used it again to answer the question that he got this past Sunday. Because they find it and they think, yeah, that gets applause. People like that. I'm going to run with that. And it sounds good to say who gets to draw the line. The woman gets to draw the line, not the government. And so we're going to run with that. So there's no surprise he's repeating himself. And so the mayor falls back on this stock answer whenever he's asked to approach the question at the heart of the abortion debate. Do human beings in the womb have the same right to life as any other human being? Or are there situations in which we can justify allowing them to be killed? It's a clever rhetorical move on his part, pretending that the real controversy over abortion hinges on who gets to decide rather on the substance of the decision in question. But his response didn't work on Sunday. After he offered this reply, Wallace asked Day if she was satisfied with the mayor's answer. Unsurprisingly, she was not. She said this: in 1996, there was language in the Democratic platform that said that we understand that people have very differing views on the issue, but we are a big tent party that includes everybody, Day said, before reiterating her question of whether the mayor is willing to add similar language back into the platform. Unsurprisingly, he is not. He said, I support the position of my party that this kind of medical care needs to be available to everyone. Again, he calls abortion medical care. That's the line they like to use. And I support the Roe versus Wade framework that holds that early in pregnancy, there are very few restrictions, and late in pregnancy, there are very few exceptions. And then Day said, so that would be a no. Her irritation is understandable. Rather than directly responding, the mayor both begged the question and misrepresented the substance of Roe. Referring to abortion as, quote, the kind of medical care assumes an answer to one of the central points of contention. Contention, a pro-life Democrat like Day evidently does not occur when the mayor's assertion that abortion, a form of killing, constitutes, quote, medical care. What's more, the mayor commonly relies on the inaccurate articulation of Roe, not only a false description of abortion, but also a cop-out to avoid stating his opinion on whether abortion limitations of any kind are an acceptable or desirable public policy. And then the article goes further and further. And so the point being here, there are pro-life Democrats. Now, some of you may be surprised by that, but there are. There are pro-choice Republicans. And so understanding this, you have right now running for the highest office in the land, every single Democratic candidate is for abortion throughout the entire pregnancy. And here you have Mayor Pete from South Bend, who I was told, and many of us were told, hey, he's the moderate candidate. You need to really look into him. He's the moderate guy. So now the moderate guy is saying, look, it's not up to me. It's up to the woman. It's a cop-out is what that is. It's the same thing when guys are asked, will you support me in this pregnancy? And they say, hey, whatever decision you make, I'll support it. No, that's a cop-out. That's a coward's way out. And what we have to get to a place of realizing is if it's a life in the womb, you know, and what Mayor Pete likes to do and what a lot of the pro-abortion proponents will like to do is they like to say, well, you know, in certain cases, it's a very, very difficult decision. Late in pregnancy, it's a very difficult decision and it's heart-wrenching. And they may even, he has said, they may even have their name picked out. They may have the crib up. They may have the nursery decorated. It's a very, very difficult decision. Here's my question, Mayor Pete. Why? Why is it difficult? If it is not a life growing in the womb, if it is not a little boy or a little girl growing in the womb, why in the world would you have a crib in the nursery? Why would you have a nursery? Why would you have the room ready? Why would you have a name picked out for a blob of cells? You know anyone that names blob of cells? No, the reason you would have all of those in place is because you believe that it's a life. And the reality is, the vast majority of abortions that occur in this country are done so out of convenience. Not because of rape, not because of incest, not because of life of the mother, not because of any of those things. And another reality is the vast majority of those even that are raped choose life. You see, so it's a little bit more involved than simply saying, well, we just need to worry about who draws the line. You see, the reason why that's not a good answer, and the reason why I can't agree with you on we just need to agree who gets to draw the line, is because that line you're drawing is giving somebody the power to end another human's life. You see, it's not just a line. It's not just a decision. It's not just a choice. It is actually saying there's a life growing inside of me and I'm going to end that life. So no, the question isn't who gets to draw the line. The question is, why does anyone get to draw the line? And who stands up for the most vulnerable? Because again, if there is life in the womb, and we live in the greatest, freest society this world has ever seen, then does that life not deserve protection under our law? Does that life not deserve protection under the Constitution? Of course it does. And here we have candidates taking the cowardly way out and not answering the questions fully. We'll be back. Never tried to break me. My sweet Jesus won't forsake me. When I'm in my Savior's shadow, where I'm supposed to be. Coming in strong with the country gospel today. That's good stuff. So as we continue the conversation and look at what's going on around the country, the reason I bring up what I brought up in the last segment is because we need to be able to see through some of these answers. Look, I get it. Politicians are busy. They're speaking at a lot of events. They're going to a lot of town halls. They're trying their best to reach the largest group of people and the largest group of voters. But we have reached a point where they're all trying to push the extreme. I mean, the positions currently that we see from every candidate on the Democratic ticket are left. Now listen to this. They are to the left of anything President Obama stood for. Think about that. They are to the left of anything that President Bill Clinton stood for in the 90s. They're to the left of anything that Hillary Clinton stood for in the 90s and early 2000s. Now we saw during the last election that she moved a little further to the left. But that's how far we've come and how far they've moved. Back during the last election, when President Trump won, I remember thinking, look, this is not going to be an easy 4 years, and it's certainly not going to be easy for President Trump to win again. If the DNC can run a true moderate that is willing to budge a little bit when it comes to abortion, that is willing to budge a little bit when it comes to socialism, I mean, for goodness sake, instead, we've seen the opposite of that. We see people like Joe Biden, who used to be a moderate, who used to say, I'm pro-life. He used to say that. And now he says, not only am I not pro-life, I believe that the government should pay for abortions. He was the author and supporter of the Hyde Amendment that said federal dollars could not go to abortions. And now he's completely flipped on that. And so if you're out there and you're saying, well, I don't know where I line up party-wise, that I don't know where I line up as a pro-lifer, if that's my number one, and for many of us, that is the issue of the day. Many of us will say, well, I'm a one-issue voter. What is that issue? Abortion. I'm pro-life, and I can't support anybody that would say otherwise. And then people say, well, you can't be a one-issue voter. Well, why not? Why not? If a president came out and I agreed with him on everything and he said, you know what, but I think that slavery is a good thing, I believe that's a one issue I can't line up with him, right? So even though I agree with him on everything else, that one issue is going to be a deal breaker for me. So in the same way, we can say I'm a one issue voter. If you stand in support of abortion, I can't support you. Now that's up to you to decide what that looks like. But it's important to know. It's important to know what conversations are occurring, what conversations are happening. I spoke to a group of kids last night that they are from kindergarten to 12th grade. I mean, it was a very diverse group. And after I spoke to the whole group, I went into a room and spoke to the 6th through 12th graders about life and abortion and policy and all of these things. And one of the kids looked at me and said, he was probably 7th or 8th grade, and he said, well, if we have had pro-lifers, people, at least people that claim to be pro-lifers, in control of the House and the Senate and the White House in Washington, why is abortion still a thing? And I looked at him and said, you know what, that's an amazing question that I would love the answer to. But you see, making bold statements is easy. Making bold statements that even counter the greater narrative is easy. But doing something about those bold statements, that's where the hard part comes in. Right? So as I talked about in the first segment, as Abraham Lincoln in Illinois gave a 3-hour speech, and he dealt with the morality of slavery, and he said, we as a nation can't continue to do this. If African Americans are men, then that means personhood. That means they have a right to self-governance. We don't have the right to govern over them. You see, that was a bold statement. That was a statement that was counter to the narrative of the day. But if you don't do anything past that statement, then that's all it is a statement. And we can say, man, what a great speech he gave. Now, he didn't do anything after that, but what a great speech. But you know, he didn't end with the speech. Conversations went further. Very difficult conversations. To the point of war. And so at some point, when we have these conversations, when we say these things, when we hear candidates, when we hear people say, look, I'm pro-life, I got you. Send me to Washington. Send me to Nashville. Or think about your own state capital, wherever you may be listening. Send me there. Maybe. But are you going to have the guts? Are you going to have the guts to do something besides just give great speeches? I mean, I think we looked at it a couple weeks ago. The Planned Parenthood in 2019 received over $600 million from the federal government. And their abortion numbers continue to increase. They now do about half of all abortions in this country. And they're receiving $600 million of taxpayer money. Why is that? I don't know. We need an answer to that. But you see, this is why it's hard. And it's not fun. It's not fun to think about what's going on. It's not fun to think about, over 2,000 abortions every single day occur in this country. That's not fun to think about. And so we can close our blinds and we can sit at our tables and we can act like these things aren't happening. Or we can get engaged. And what does that look like? That looks like talking to your neighbors. That looks like partnering with a pregnancy center. That looks like giving to pregnancy centers. It looks like advocating for the unborn, for moms. You see, we could just go to the March for Life in Washington and then come home and then just do it again next year. We could do that and not do anything outside of that. And it would make us feel good, and our Instagram posts would be awesome, and our Facebook posts would be awesome, and our tweets would be awesome. And man, we could really filter it out and say, look what we're doing so much great stuff. But if that's all we're doing, then the question is, what are we doing? But again, if it's a life, if it's a unique individual life growing in the womb, and you know that it is, we all do, that changes things. It changes things. I was scrolling through Twitter before I came in here, and the ACLU tweeted, abortion, they tweeted this in all caps, abortion is healthcare, or abortion is a right. That's a synonymous, they use that interchangeable. And they put the clapping hand emojis, which I can't stand, but that's what they did in between each word to emphasize, hey, it's a right. You know, I see something like that. The ACLU was founded for you know, and did great work for a long time. But I see things like that and I go, well, hold on, I thought nobody was pro-abortion. That sure sounds to me like they're pro-abortion. So think about that. If anybody wrote about the March for Life or talked about the March for Life and the 500,000 people that were there in Washington, how did they phrase it? I bet you saw a lot of anti-abortion advocates, anti-abortion groups. March for Life, the anti-abortion group. You see, they refuse to call us pro-life. They want to make sure everyone knows what we're against. Now, I'm not apologizing for that. I am anti-abortion, so that's fine. Label me as that. But they still call the other folks pro-choice. They don't call them pro-abortion. You know, because they would make an argument, well, nobody's pro-abortion, so why not? Why not? It's a simple question. Why would anybody not be pro-abortion? If it's not a life, if it's just a blob and it has no real meaningful value, because it's just a blob anyway, it's just a parasite on your body that you can dispose of whenever you want. If that's the case, why wouldn't you be pro-abortion? You see, the reason why they say no one is pro-abortion is because they don't want you to think that they're for the ending of an innocent human life. That's why they don't use the language that we use. Because for many of them, if they admit that it's a life, then they have to admit what a successful abortion is. And a successful abortion ends the heartbeat of a human. A botched abortion, an unsuccessful abortion, means that a life was spared and survived an abortion. You see, these are difficult conversations that we should be having. When presidential candidates, when people that claim to be pastors, when whoever says, well, no one's pro-abortion, or it's a very tough decision between a woman and her doctor, the follow-up question must be, why? Please explain to me why it's a tough decision. Please explain to me why it's agonizing to make that decision. If it's not a life, if it's just a blob, why is anyone bothered by it? The reason we're bothered by it is because it is a life. The reason we're bothered by it is because it has its own heartbeat. The reason men and women mourn when they find out they had a miscarriage is because they lost a life. You see, it's simple stuff, but we're afraid of the language. And many of the commentators of the day, many of the reporters of the day, they don't understand the importance of follow-up questions. Of, well, you say it's going to be a difficult conversation between a doctor and a woman. Well, why is it a difficult conversation? It's a pretty simple question. And the only way to answer that is it's difficult because they're talking about the ending of another human life, and that other human life is their child. It's tough. But I will say, we are on the right path. And some good things are occurring. And I saw that in Washington as thousands, hundreds of thousands of people came together to say life has value. We'll be back. Young and old, black and white, rich and poor, there's no divide. You're the mighty, hear the powerless singing, oh, oh, God, forgive us. So today's been a good day. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation as we've had it. It's always interesting to talk about this every single week. And I don't know. There's other great shows. There's other great podcasts. There's certainly great places you can go to talk about life and abortion. I would argue there's no other show that does this as consistently on a weekly basis. You're just not. I mean, that's all we talk about every single week, and it's that important. It's that important to me. It's that important to Hope Resource Center. This is something that, I mean, I don't mind it. I don't mind that one day we may look back. I mean, I long for the day that Roe v. Wade would be overturned. I long for the day that abortion would be unthinkable, but. But if I'm sitting here still doing a show when I'm 60 years old and I look back at 30 plus years of talking about this issue every single week, and that's what I have to show for my work, then so be it. It's worth that much. Look, if you think about when people fought slavery, when people fought against the Holocaust, they didn't have podcasts. But there would have been people out there every opportunity they had spending it saying, do you understand what's going on around you? There would have been Jewish people saying, do you understand what's happening to our brothers and our sisters? There'd have been freedmen in the 1800s saying, do you understand what's happening on plantations to my brothers and sisters? You see, it's worth the time. It's worth the effort. And we need to speak for the vulnerable. And again, there are no more vulnerable people in today in the current society than the unborn. Truly have no voice, no platform, no opportunity to speak. Lives that are just being disposed of come and go. And so we want to give voice to them, and we're happy to do that. And if you want to help us to continue that work, you can mark your calendar right now, April 30th. April 30th, we are having our next banquet, and this is going to be an amazing night. April 30th, that will be 7 o'clock is when we will start. You can get reservations, will be open February 4th, so very soon. It does not cost to attend one of our banquets. It is a fundraiser. I will at some point be standing on stage asking you to write checks or swipe cards or hand cash. And so don't be surprised when that occurs. It will happen. We would love to see you there. It is going to be semi-formal attire. It's going to be at the Press Room, a gorgeous venue here in the city of Knoxville. And guess what? Over the we've listened to your concerns over the past few years, different places we've been. Parking's not been amazing. So what are we doing this year? Complimentary valet parking. Look, all you got to do is drive it to the door. We'll take care of the rest. And by we, I mean the folks that are doing the parking. And so I would encourage you to mark your calendars April 30th. It's going to be an amazing, amazing night. I'm not going to go into details, but just a lot of fun going on there. Going to share some stories. Going to talk about the work that we're doing at Hope and beyond. And, man, just, again, it's worth it. It's worth the time. It's worth the effort. And a difference is being made both for right now and eternally as we not only see moms and babies saved, but we are also seeing salvation. We're seeing the gospel shared with folks in our city. And it's such an amazing opportunity. And so if you're not familiar with what happens at our banquets, I would encourage you to come. Maybe you're listening and you're saying, hey, I'd love to sponsor. I'd love to be a sponsor for the banquet. Maybe you own a business, or maybe you just individually would love to sponsor. Reach out to us, investinghope.com. Would love to hear from you. You can email me, andrew@knoxvillehope.com. Would love to hear from you as we seek to make a difference in this city. Maybe you're listening and you're saying, I don't know much about the Pregnancy Center. This is my first time to listen to the show, and I don't know much about what's going on at Hope Resource Center. This would be a great opportunity for you to join us as well. We'd love to see you and share a little bit about the story of Hope as we reach this community that God has put us in. We don't take it for granted. We love the opportunities that we've been given, and we're grateful to serve the women of this city that are facing unplanned pregnancies. And what a gift it is that we get to be a part of that. And folks, we have, and I know I spent a lot of time today talking about some of the things that are occurring that may be negative, but the reality is the reason why they're ramping up their conversation and they're moving farther and farther to the left is because they see the writing on the wall. They see that a difference is being made. Many, many left-leaning states, pro-abortion states, are even moving in that direction because they believe that Roe is on its way out. And so, again, when Roe v. Wade is overturned, it goes back to the states. We'll have places like Tennessee that are going to be set up nicely in terms of we already have trigger bills in place that will say if Roe is overturned, abortion is outlawed in the state of Tennessee. We have other states that are not going to be doing that. They're going to be going a different direction, so our work won't be done. But, man, that's a day that we long to see in this society. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Feeling in the night, highest point in